Please be seated. Well, it looks like we have a full house on this sunny day, which is always nice to see. I noticed that we have a number of speakers for Rule Petition 1901. Judge Koshnick, you are the presenter, and I don't know if anybody has advised you of the time limit, but I think 15 minutes is what we had kind of thought. Is that going to be okay for you?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And then we have another number of other presenters. I would urge each of you to keep it to 5 minutes. We have read everything that you all have sent us, and we appreciate your sending things to us in advance. Are you prepared to proceed?
Yes, I am.
Okay, please do.
Morning, Chief Justice Rogensack and fellow justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's my honor and privilege to be here today and to address you on Rule Petition 1501. We have an imminent, by that I mean could happen at any time, problem, and it's inevitable, and that is a shortage of stenographic court reporters in Wisconsin. As is discussed in the Making the Record Committee report and other materials, 43% of our court reporters in Wisconsin, official court reporters, were eligible to retire as of the end of last year, and within the next 5 years, the number is going to increase to 63%. So using rough math, if we have 280 official reporters in Wisconsin, half retire in the next couple of years, that's 140 of them. In the past 2 years in Wisconsin, we've had 14 students graduate from Steno Reporting School, so that's 140 likely or potential retirement vacancies, and 14 graduates who could fill those 140 vacancies. It's a 10-to-1 ratio. So it truly is a problem that needs to be addressed. I do value our stenographic court reporters. As you know, I was on the bench myself for 18 years. I had a steno for the entire 18-year period. I appointed four sequentially, of course. All of my court reporters had real time, and that's a very valuable product that a court reporter can provide for a judge. There really is no substitute for that. What my rule petition calls for is really to recognize digital audio recording as a fully acceptable method of taking the record in the circuit courts. There's no intention here to abolish anybody's position. To the contrary, we hire as many stenographers as we're able to locate. The problem is the opposite. We have vacancies that go unfilled for several months. I have one right now that's been open for over 1 year. And so no judge has ever been told or will ever be told by me, you're not allowed to hire a stenographic court reporter. I'd like to give judges the flexibility, however, to order to hire a digital audio reporter if they're unable to hire a stenographer. Judges are also told that if they're willing to have a digital audio recording unit installed in their courtroom, it'll be installed as soon as we can get to it, and we're in the process of installing them now. My plan is to have one DAR unit in each courthouse in Wisconsin by the end of this year so that we're ready in case the shortage hits us sooner rather than later. And even if your appointed official court reporter is a steno, if there's a vacancy or an absence, we want to be able to fill in. My priority is to keep the courts running. I don't want to have to shut a court down because we can't find a way to make the record. So to me, shutting a court down due to absence or unavailability of a reporter is simply not acceptable.
Will the record that's being made electronically be transcribed electronically?
Well, that's a very good question. It won't be transcribed electronically. It'll be transcribed onto a paper transcript, just like a steno transcript is prepared. The transcripts are indistinguishable. They're produced on paper. Now, they can be filed through the e-filing system and available electronically on a computer screen, if that's what you mean. But, yes, the transcript will appear the same, whether it's from a stenographer or from a digital audio reporter.
Who does the transcription if it's from a machine rather than a stenographer?
Well, Well, normally the court reporter who takes the hearing is given the first opportunity to do the transcript. If that reporter is unable or unwilling to do the transcript, then the judge or the district court administrator finds another reporter who's willing to prepare the transcript. And they are paid in addition for preparing the transcript beyond their hourly pay.
Okay,
we have not had
a regular court reporter will do the transcript from a digital audio reporting?
They're certainly capable of doing it. There's no reason that they can't do it.
Maybe what you should do is give us paint a picture for us of how this looks in a courtroom when this device is being used.
Well, I think the main difference that you'll notice, visually at least, is that you have an extra microphone at each table. At some counties are able to integrate it. So every courtroom I've been in has an audio system like you have here. In some counties, we can integrate the DAR monitoring system with the audio amplification system. So one microphone serves two functions, amplification in the room and transmission of the audio signal to the digital recorder. If we're unable to integrate them, then we have two microphones in each place where a person might be speaking. Other than that, you still have a court reporter seated near the judge. He or she either has...
That's really what I'm getting at. There's a human being in the court device.
That's the recommended procedure. That's normally the situation, yes.
And that person does the transcription?
Yes,
okay.
Normally.
I think that might be...
Is that
person... Yeah, because I wasn't understanding your answer at all.
So is that person trained then as a stenographer or...
They can be. They're at minimum trained as a digital audio reporter.
Okay.
There
and
are
that's
special...
different. That's a difference, obviously. I mean, I read all your... This is the first time I'd heard of someone actually monitoring the device and then transcribing it. So they're trained to transcribe the digital audio recorder.
Yes, they are. And I would say the training for a steno is higher or more intensive than the training for a digital audio reporter. In fact, a few cases, including Judge Babler, who you'll hear from, his current court reporter was not qualified to do steno when she was first hired, so she started on the DAR, and she used her time in court to brush up on her steno skills, and now it's allowed her to elevate from DAR to steno, and the steno position pays more.
So are there people coming out of, is there training then for DAR, and are there more people coming out of that training than there are out of stenography training?
We are encouraging technical schools to provide specific programs for DAR training. Right now, CCAP does the training, and you can train someone to run the DAR in a much less extensive program than you do to become a steno.
So right now, the DAR recording training is through CCAP?
Primarily, yes. There are classes as well at technical schools. I don't know the details of that, but they're trained and certified through CCAP to make sure they're able to run the machine.
And how do they get certified? Is there a test? I'm just curious about how this all plays out.
They have to demonstrate efficiency in operating the machine and preparing a transcript from the recording.
And who tests that?
Ultimately, they're not hired without my approval.
Okay. I mean, is there a way to have some kind of standardized, test for lack of a better word, just so we are assuring? I mean, this all sounds great,
right.
Just to assure that what you're saying is going to happen is actually going to happen and that we don't have the issue of people not able to do what they're required to do.
You do have a letter from AAERT, I think it is. It's an Association of Electronic Reporters, and they have a certification process as well. I have not required the certification in Wisconsin, but we could certainly use that as an option.
So we could have them required to be certified under that AAERT?
Assuming that organization is willing to do so, which I think they are. They're very favorably in support of the petition. So, yes, this is a work in progress as well. I've been implementing the DAR systems under my residual authority to approve other means of taking the record. We've had a good 10-year pilot project now in several courts around the state. I didn't want to take too many formal steps without the court first approving the petition. So, yes, we can certainly set up.
That could be something that we require in order to assure that we've got this measurable level of competence in running this equipment.
Right. It's really mainly mechanical, Justice Dale. You're listening to audio to make sure the words are being picked up. You're watching the dials to make sure the microphones are recording. Before court starts, you're testing the equipment. You're making sure the microphones are operational. If you're using lavalier mics or wireless microphones, you're making sure the batteries are fresh. You make sure the computer has been updated with the latest software. So it's really more mechanical than anything else.
Right, but I think the concern of the judges and the court in general would be more, yes, all of that is important, but it's more the transcription end of it, that these, and maybe that takes some practice to listen to digital recording and accurately transcribe it And maybe there's, I mean, I assume that's part of what they test, is that there's accuracy, just the way a stenographer is tested for accuracy when they take their tests.
Yes, that's true, but speed isn't as important because you're not in court keeping up with a real-time
right.
reporter. He or she needs to be certified to operate at a faster speed because the words are coming up on the screen in court as people are speaking. With a DAR transcript, you have as much time as you need to prepare the transcript.
Right.
Go ahead. I want to focus on a phrase that's had been the source of some consternation by those who've written in, and the source or other means approved by the director of state court. That language, which is in proposed amendment SCR 7101 sub 3. In your earlier answer, you had indicated in painting a picture that the preferable procedure will be someone in the court monitoring the system. My concern is this, that we as a court not approve things that we don't realize that we are approving. I understand from your answer that normally, and the recommended procedure is someone is in the courtroom monitoring. But that leaves a lot of room for other things. So explain to us, what are some of the other things that may happen other than someone in the court monitoring?
Well, if I could begin, Justice Bradley, by saying I already have that authority under the current rule. We're simply changing the subsection. So right now, all the DARs are operating under what I call that residual authority. So DAR at this point is an other method authorized by the director.
Well, let me be more specific. What about remote monitoring? Can that be possibly done under any other method approved by the director of state courts?
Yes, remote monitoring would technically be monitored, so it would actually be allowed under the proposal, and it's allowed now. It's allowed on an experimental basis. I had a judge come to me and say that he wanted to try remote monitoring to see if it would work. His court reporter has personal requirements, where she has to be out of the building by a certain time to pick up her children. He's assigned to a northern county. It extends her drive time. He asked me if he could allow her to remote monitor from his courtroom in his home county, a proceeding he's doing in another county that's about an hour north. And so he did that, and he said it went fine. So we've experimented with that.
I understand that the state of Illinois does remote monitoring and that the committee looked negatively upon that as not being appropriate in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think it's something we may need to look at in the future, depending on how tight the resources become. In Illinois, it was really neat to see it in operation. And there, the DAR reporters and the stenos and the clerk of court all work together. And the key, I think, here is to send the steno where you're likely to have a transcript. It's much easier for a transcript to be made from a stenographic recording because it's, I guess, 90% done by the time you take your notes. And if you have real time, it's 90% done on the screen. It is more time-consuming to make a transcript from a DAR recording because the person has to listen to the whole thing and the raw audio and type the transcript from that. And so what they did in Illinois, what they do in the federal court, in Madison, in fact, is the same thing. At the beginning of the week or the beginning of the day, the clerk and the reporters look at which hearings are most likely to require a transcript, and that's where the stenos are sent.
What are other alternatives? Now, currently, as I understand it, if you use alternatives, it's pursuant to rules for the use of alternatives set by the director of state court. But that language about according to rules has been excised. And so that's why I'm concerned that we might be approving things we don't know about. What about unmonitored? What about unmonitored use here? I know that the committee's ultimate conclusion was that unmonitored DAR is not appropriate for circuit court use in Wisconsin. Yet, as I read this kind of general catch-all with no rules established, it can be anything, and even including something not approved by the director of state court in certain situations.
Well, there is that emergency provision that allows a judge to use other means with approval of the chief judge. I can't think when that would be used except in an emergency where you might have a liberty interest at stake or children that need a hearing regarding parental placement and there's simply no reporter available, then the chief judge could approve use of unmonitored DAR. But it'd be either that or shutting the court down. So that's why we have to trust our chief judges to make those determinations.
Mm-hmm. So we are approving something here that allows for remote monitoring, that allows for unmonitored.
Yes, but that's nothing different than what the current rule allows. The rule is proposed. It increases my power none. It keeps my authority the same as
what
it is
now.
What
rules have you established? Currently, if you use an alternative, you need to have established rules. What rules do you have, or do you anticipate for instance, remote monitoring or unmonitored situations?
Well, unmonitored situations would not be approved absent an emergency. Those, for courts of record, those are used routinely in court commissioner hearing rooms where they're not courts of record. That's been the case for, as far as I can remember, 20 years in Wisconsin. So there is the use of unmonitored DAR in court commissioner hearing rooms.
But what my question was, what rules? If, I mean, you may not have them yet. You're still perhaps early.
Right.
No, you're not asking for this to go into effect until July 1, as I understand it.
And I haven't.
My concern is that we know what we are approving. And with the excise of you have to set up rules and the insertion, it can be anything you want, I'm certainly on board with the reality of court reporting and that changes need to be made. But I don't want to be in a situation where I'm approving something that I find out 3 years ago the language is so broad and the rules non-existent that I'm approving it now here today.
The rule is proposed to be a continuation of my current authority. I don't have rules developed. I haven't been asked to authorize that. So, I mean, I can't imagine.
That's in the current rule that it's crossed out in the amendment.
Well, it's in a different subsection. I still have authority to approve other means of taking the record. So if you grant the petition, we're moving DAR from that residual authority up to the standard recognized along with steno and voice writing. And then the residual language remains the same. And I don't know what the future holds. I'm not aware of anything right now I'd approve. I'd have to take a look at it and look at the circumstances. And so I think, in a sense, you need to trust the director and the chief judges to make those determinations. Those are little, if ever, used subsections.
I have two other areas that I want to ask, but I'm going to ask you.
Yes, please extend the time, because I think it's very important that the court has their questions answered.
The next area, which was raised in a lot of concerns espoused by those who wrote in, dealt with the word primary. And that is, as I recall the language, if I can pull it up quickly, it deals with that, generally speaking, the court reporter will be assigned to the judge who hires the court reporter, and that court reporter will serve primarily for that judge. And some people were concerned there's no definition of primary or what do you mean by primary. And so I ask you, because I too am concerned what you mean by primary, understand I come from my personal experience of 10 years as a circuit court judge quite some time ago in Marathon County, and things have changed. But my court reporter was one of my main friends and confidants, and I worked so closely. And I think a lot of judges who have the same court reporter for year after year after year have that relationship. You hire that person, and now I think some of the judges are concerned. They're being told, okay, you hire the person, but only primarily. So what do you mean by primarily? Or let me ask more specifically, since it's primarily in the judge's courtroom who hired the judge, the court reporter, what's non-primary? Let me ask that. What's your concept of what isn't primary? In other words, what can you do?
May I begin by saying that I understand with my experience, with my own reporter that I appointed, I wanted her to be in my courtroom. I was used to her real time. I was confident in her abilities.
Mm-hmm.
It was rarely a case where a chief judge would say we need to move her. Typically, it was for an Americans with Disabilities case. They had a litigant who was hard of hearing down the hallway, different branch, and they wanted to use my reporter for that hearing so the person could see on the screen what's being said in court. Of course, I would agree. Or if my court was down, if my jury trial settled and I was open for the day, and the reporter down the hall called in sick, was unavailable, the chief judge or DCA would call and ask permission. So that's not changing. And actually, what the word primarily does is it reconciles arguably inconsistent Supreme Court rules and statutes. So right now, the chief judge, the DCA, and the director all have authority to reassign court reporters as needed under Supreme Court Rule 70.245 and Section 751.025 of the statutes. So by adding primarily to the two sections I've referred to, which would be 68.123 of the statutes, 68.123 of the Supreme Court rules and 751.02 of the statutes, we're harmonizing those four provisions. Right now you have a potential conflict. The chief judge could call the circuit court judge and say, I need your court reporter to go down the hall to cover an ADA hearing, and the judge could say, well, no, under 68.123, the reporter is my reporter. They're appointed to be in my court, and the judge could theoretically block a chief judge from moving that court reporter. So this reconciles those provisions.
What I really want is, what's your definition of the opposite of primary? Right now, Section 2, and it's a point of contention, you have court reporters serves primarily in the judge's bench. I'll tell you what I did. Yesterday when I was preparing for this, I thought, okay, people don't know what primarily is. I know that it's anticipated primarily will be in the judge's branch who appointed and hired the court reporter. So I thought to myself, as a former English teacher, it must be non-primarily. So what's the antonym of primary? The antonym of primarily is barely, hardly, marginally, minimally, scarcely. That's in Merriam-Webster, the thesaurus, secondarily. So is your concept of how this is going to operate that it will be in the judges' chambers who appointed or hired that court reporter primarily, and that when it isn't, that will be barely, hardly, marginally, minimally, scarcely? I just want your...
Yes.
What do you anticipate? Are those the kinds of infrequent things? Because it's not in the rule, of course.
Once again, it's a continuation of previous practice. We trust our chief judges to respect the autonomy of each elected circuit court judge.
I don't want to... The problem is this. We deal with words in this job, right? And the words stay with us forever. Now, circumstances change, and you can say it's just codifying what is going on today, and that's all you intend to do, but your words are much broader than that. And so, our caseload is filled with things that are what everyone thought they were going to be, and then it didn't turn out that way. You know? And so I want to be sure that I know what you intend by the words, not just a continuation of the current, but what do the words mean to you? Because those are the words that we will be approving.
Well, I think before my proposal, Edward, primarily, it could fairly be read as exclusively. In other words, a circuit court judge could say, you're not taking my court reporter. I don't care if you need her to do an ADA hearing. I don't care if my calendar came off. I don't care what the other judges need today. Under the statute and the Supreme Court rule, that's my court reporter. I have ultimate and final authority over where he or she goes. So primarily, in my word, means unless there are extraordinary circumstances that require the reporter to be used somewhere else to keep a court operating.
Is that like emergency situation?
Not necessarily emergency. Probably emergency. ADA is another good example. And just a reporter, a court being down. So if a court goes down, that reporter is authorized under state work rules to work on transcripts while she's in the courthouse waiting to be called into court. And we pay them hourly for that. They're also allowed to bill per page for the transcript and supplement their regular income. So a reporter in that situation might prefer to be paid hourly to work on transcripts and also be generating per page payment. They may be needed down the hall to do a jury trial where that reporter needs a break or is not available. So in that situation, yes, the chief judge could say, I need to keep the jury trial on schedule. We have a child victim or witnesses who are waiting to be called. There's no other way to take the record. Steno's preferable to DAR for juries. So I'm going to direct that your reporter go down the hall, and the reporter can work on transcripts, which she can bill by the page for, on his or her own time at home in the evening or over the weekend. Now, that doesn't happen very often, but that would be another situation.
So it would be, you know, not just emergency, but infrequently is really, seems to me, what you're saying. It would be in the judge's courtroom branch, but infrequently the other? I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to hear your words.
Yes, infrequently, and I would think typically only when the report is not needed in his or her home courtroom.
Judge Kosnick, is there currently authority to reassign a court reporter to a new courtroom?
Yes, Justice Kelly. Under both Supreme Court Rule 70.245 and Wisconsin Statute Section 751.025.
And does Section 2 of the petition expand that authority?
No, it doesn't. It simply incorporates primarily language into two companion rules or statutes, if you will, so that all four are in agreement. And the two I'm asking to amend would be Supreme Court Rule 68.12(3) and 751.02 of the statutes. Then all four of those provisions would make it clear that the reporter primarily works for the judge who appointed him or her, but the Chief Justice has authority to move the reporter to a different courtroom if it's necessary, essentially, to keep the courts operating.
So the upshot of the word primarily is that we are just harmonizing the rules to reflect the current state of authority.
Yes, and other rules. Right now there's a conflict between the first two and the second two, in my view. And I should add, as stenographer resources dwindle, it may become the case that we need more flexibility to move people around. I mean, we're going to need a flexible workforce. It depends on how bad the situation is when it hits. If we have a mass number of retirements in the next couple of years, we're going to need more flexibility to move reporters around to cover the hearings. And we're going to prioritize stenos and jury trials and other proceedings where you're likely to have a transcript or benefit from real time. And we're likely to use a DAR in a high volume, low transcript court, like traffic court, small claims, initial appearances. It's frankly a waste of valuable human resources to have a steno taking down traffic trials that are probably never going to be appealed or reduce the transcript. It's an efficient workforce to meet the needs of the courts.
Any other justice have a question?
I have one other area, but others, if they have questions, I certainly will let them go first. Hmm? The final area deals with, the provision that indicates certain information is not subject to the public records law. And my concern, this is a 751.12 proceeding, and we don't change substantive law. Usually what is or is not something subject to public records is either comes to us via a case that we decide or is set forth in the statutes in a substantive law. So, and yet here you have a declaration that certain information is not subject to the, as I understand it, is not a public record. So can you inform me on that further?
Yes,
respond to my concern that it's substantive law not appropriate for us to be enacting.
Yes, once again, I'm trying to maintain the current practice and basically bring the rule language up to meet what we're actually doing. So under current Supreme Court rule or statute, the notes of the stenographic court reporter become part of the clerk of court's file. Ipso facto, it's a public record,
right,
unless it's a closed case. And so in the steno case, the steno notes are the raw material or the verbatim record under my proposed language of the proceeding. And then the transcript becomes the official court record, quote unquote. And so if we're going to make digital audio recording the equivalent of steno reporting, then the digital audio recording must also be maintained by the clerk of court and is therefore also a public record. Now, currently, many or most stenos, as far as I know, record audio as well on their personal computer equipment. My steno reporter always had a little microphone on her stand, and it would record the entire proceeding on her laptop computer. I never thought that would be a public record. I mean, I'm trying to keep it the way it is. That's normally the equivalent of a draft or notes, which are normally exempt from the public records law. My main concern is if there's a question about a transcript, a member of the public should be able to go to the clerk of court and say, I want to see the steno notes to compare the transcript, or I want to hear the digital audio recording to compare it to the transcript. So those would remain public. If you felt that personal recordings or notes or other material not the verbatim record should be public record, that's fine with me. This is my best effort at keeping everything the same as it currently is.
I understand, except right now things are essentially public. And my concern is not just maintaining the status quo. Actually, you mentioned drafts, and I thought to myself as I was reading this, oh, maybe this is a draft exception. See, but that's the kind of stuff that comes to us in cases, whether or not it is a draft exception. So I really was concerned that this is addressing an issue of substantive law rather than procedure by declaring this. You didn't use the term draft, but that's what, just like you indicated, that's what comes to mind, or a personal memo or something like that, that is a recognized. But whether or not this constitutes that, it would be generally something you'd get an attorney general opinion on, and then we might be having it at a case anyway. So I'm concerned about that. How important is that to your the integrity of your scheme here? By that I mean
speak. Before you answer, could one of you point me to the section you're talking about?
Okay.
So is it 71.03 sub 2, you have the creation of that to clarify that the verbatim record is not the official record of the proceeding.
It doesn't say anything in 71.03.2 about public records.
Perhaps it is, and I just said...
Well, maybe I didn't... Yeah, I don't know.
It's 71.03 sub 4.
Sub 4, is it? Okay, 16. Thank you.
Yes, Section 16, referred to Supreme Court Rule 71.03.
Thank you all very much.
Is it sub 4 or sub 3E?
Oh, it means sub 4. That was a typo, Justice Dallet. It's 4. Okay. My memo and my response letter, I had 3E, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
But to answer your question, Justice Bradley, the most important thing, I think, is that you do provide that the digital audio recording is a public record to keep it on par with the Steno's notes, which is the current state of law. If you wanted to remain silent on whether a court reporter's private audio recording on his or her laptop computer is public or not public, that really doesn't matter much. I was trying to maintain things the way I understand them to currently be, but no, that's not a problem if you remove the language about what's not a public record.
It says 71.03 sub 4, except by order of the court, supplemental materials made in support of the verbatim record, supplemental material, is not subject to public inspection. And I say to myself, as I indicated in my inquiry, you know, that might be good, that's maybe what we're doing now, it might be bad, who knows, but it seems to be substantive, whatever, and the kind of thing that, as I said.
It could be court reporter's notes of the proceedings, since they write down names and spellings of unusual words, audio on their computer, those are normally supplemental materials. The main thrust of the recommendation is to keep the Steno notes in the case of Steno, the voice recording in the case of a voice reporter, and the digital audio recording in the case of a DAR as a public record maintained by the clerk as the clerk's property subject to open inspection. And I should add on that, I've directed CCAP. Right now the rule, Supreme Court rule, requires that Steno notes be maintained for 10 years. So you do have cases that are appealed more than 10 years later. The notes have been destroyed, or maybe less than 10 years, and the reporter is no longer available to transcribe them. Other reporters are unable to transcribe them. I have 20 appeals right now in Milwaukee where they can't make a transcript because the reporter is not returning our phone calls. These DAR recordings are maintained for 50 years. And regardless of whether the Steno was available to who took the DAR operator is available to transcribe or not, anybody who's qualified to listen and type can listen to that recording and type a transcript. So I think it goes a long way towards protecting the record. And I'll tell you, as a circuit court judge, the most frustrating thing for me was to reduce a felony drunk driving to a misdemeanor or an ordinance because the defendant said he didn't have a lawyer when he pled previously. You have to have a transcript to prove a valid waiver of counsel, as you know. With no transcript, the judge, under my understanding, has no other option but to knock out those priors. And so there are public safety implications. And that happened when they changed the count, the legislature changed the look-back period from 10 years to lifetime. So a lot of cases that are more than 10 years old have no transcript available. If there's no counsel noted in the record, it's not a valid conviction. These DAR recordings are going to be maintained by CCAP for 50 years. And I think it was a long way to maintain the record.
As a practical matter, I understand that I had a court reporter who independently recorded what was going on with her own microphone. And I understand now the issue surrounding whether that's public record. But as a practical matter, are these DAR court reporters going to also be recording as well as the official recording?
I don't think so. That's not in the standard setup. It's just one recording device that's backed up by multiple servers. I think the typical steno uses a laptop to process the transcription process, and that is an extra function of the laptop to record audio what he or she is taking down on the steno machine.
Okay. Thank you.
One thing I wanted to add is I did send you a letter I sent out to the reporters who complained about gaps and problems with recording, and I said to each reporter I was concerned to read about DAR not capturing the entire record, and if that's true, that's really a problem. So I assume that you're talking about an unmonitored situation, typically in a court commissioner's hearing room. If it's a monitored DAR that has a gap or did not make an accurate verbatim recording, I'd like the case number and the date so I can investigate, because that would be a big problem that I would want to know about before I could recommend this to the court. I think there were 10 reporters that wrote in with those concerns. I sent the letters to each of the 10. One wrote back a few days ago and confirmed it was, in fact, an unmonitored DAR in a court commissioner hearing room. And we heard anecdotes on the making record of the committee about inaccurate, incomplete recordings. I've tracked down as many as I haven't been able to confirm one case. As far as I'm concerned, it's all unconfirmed anecdotes of DARs failing when you have a monitored DAR, which is what the rule calls for.
Okay.
Monitored DAR.
Thank you very much. And you'll have some time after others comment, Judge Koshnick, to add anything else that you think might be helpful. The first person I have on my list is Jean Bisquette. Jean?
Good morning, Chief Justice Rogensack and Justices. I'm Jean Bisquette, the Chief Information Officer for the Wisconsin Courts, and CCAP, my department, is responsible for installing, supporting, and maintaining the monitored digital audio recording systems that have been installed in the circuit courts throughout the state. I wanted to take some time to speak with you specifically about the technologies that have been implemented to provide Wisconsin courts with the ability to take a digital audio record. Several of our court reporters raised concerns about how the concept of a blended system could jeopardize the integrity of the record. That concern's valid, and if we don't use the right technology, we don't have the right person responsible for using it, or we don't have a dedicated person monitoring the recording, even the most highly functional equipment will have failures from time to time. CCAP is a committed partner in the goal to create a highly functional blended system. I believe the issues that have been raised are from older equipment or unmonitored recordings, and both of these can result in inaudible portions of a recording. But these scenarios can be easily avoided if we ensure our systems include two required components. First, the systems we install must be state-of-the-art technology, and second, the staffing must be dedicated to effectively administer the recordings. Over the past year, CCAP staff has been installing modern digital audio recording systems throughout the state. This technology has advanced over the past decade and has proven to be a reliable means to take the record. We use the same technologies that many other state courts and the federal courts rely upon to make a high-quality, multi-channel digital audio recording. The systems consist of a dedicated computer that runs the audio software, multiple microphones that are placed on counsel tables, the bench, and the witness stand to capture court proceedings, and a high-quality mixer to combine the multiple audio outputs into a single recording that can later be played back for transcription. A variety of microphones are available to address a variety of acoustical challenges that many courtrooms provide. We offer low-profile, handheld, and lapel microphones and work with each digital court reporter and judge to create a system that best meets each courtroom's individual needs. The digital court reporter and the judge are provided with software that allows them to play back these recordings and to even isolate one microphone if necessary to improve the sound quality during playback. Most calls received by the CCAP call center are about sound quality and usually prior to court proceedings. This is the appropriate time for CCAP staff to help so we can quickly take care of any concerns before court begins. Through our troubleshooting efforts, we also have noticed some patterns where settings are changed or cords become disconnected. We will be addressing these problems throughout 2019 as we upgrade our systems and isolate the equipment in a manner where cords cannot be easily pulled on or moved and sound inputs can't accidentally become uncalibrated. These upgrades will be the state-of-the-art technology with multiple simultaneous recordings stored in different locations. To date, we've installed 12 of these systems for our digital court reporters, and an additional 48 have been set up in courtrooms throughout the state to be used when these digital court reporters travel with their judges for an out-of-county purpose or also for emergency purposes. When used properly, these recording systems work well, and I'm confident the technologies we've chosen will serve the court system well over the long run. The second component to ensure a high-quality recording is the dedicated person responsible for actually monitoring the recording as it happens. Just like the steno court reporter, the digital court reporter has an active role in the courtroom to ensure they can clearly understand what's being recorded, and if they cannot, they can take action. When digital court reporters are hired, CCAP staff go on site to provide hands-on training. We show them how to run the system, how to do sound checks, each morning to ensure the microphones are functioning properly and will capture a clear recording of the proceedings. We train them on confidence monitoring and the importance of ensuring the record is high quality as it is happening. We also train them on how to tag the audio file with important events. This logging serves as a way to quickly move through the recording to find important information during playback. This is especially valuable if a judge or court reporter want to quickly review testimony or sentencing on a case. They can rapidly jump to that part of the audio to listen to the specifics. Logging is also important when creating transcripts, as they inform the digital court reporter who is speaking. So in the instance where two voices are similar, notes can be added to avoid any confusion. I previously mentioned that we installed digital audio recording systems in 48 other locations, which can be used when digital court reporters are on out-of-county assignments or emergencies. During the Making the Record committee meetings, the steno reporters reported that inaudibles on recordings were a concern. After hearing that, I worked with my team to provide hands-on training to multiple people in each county where we've installed these systems to ensure we are still in a position to create a quality recording, even if the system is only being used for emergencies. It is critical a number of staff in these counties have a good understanding of how the systems work and their role in using it. Training binders are left for the staff to reference, and a quick startup guide is attached to each DAR computer to provide a reference on how to properly perform sound checks and ensure the system's ready to capture the proceedings. The key to these technologies working successfully is dedicated staffing. These staff need to be properly trained, and the technology needs to be properly supported. To that end, the CCAP tech staff have been trained and are available to immediately respond to address any equipment malfunction. We're committed to making this work as seamlessly as possible for the circuit courts, and are in the process of building a dedicated team whose responsibility will be to provide expert-level support for these systems. My plan is to have this team work in a proactive manner where we can see and repair most deficiencies even before the digital court reporter notices. I'm confident we can build a very successful blended system for the Wisconsin courts, and we'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much.
I have one question for you. Mm-hmm. When I was a trial court judge, we sometimes had witnesses testifying by telephone or video conference or people participating in hearings by telephone or video conference. Is there a way to hook the DAR system into the telephone system and the video conference system so that that is captured well?
So the answer would be that depends. Each courtroom and courthouse is different. We've had been able to actually attach it to the teleconferencing in some counties, but it, again, depends kind of on phone systems and video conferencing systems in the counties. When we can hook them in, though, we do.
What happens when you can't?
Then that's what I want to say is if we can hook them in, it's like they go right through the mixer. If you can't, many of the judges will hold the handheld mic by the phone for those recordings to capture that.
Thanks for all your hard work on putting this together.
Thank you.
And I mean that to you, the prior person who presented also. I forgot.
There's been a lot of work. I can see that. Any other questions from the bench? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see, Judge Craig Day.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court. I am here as the living, breathing embodiment of Monitor DAR. I've been on the bench for going on 10 years this August. I have had a Monitor DAR all 10 years. I have never, unless my reporter is gone, used anything else. I've done 150 jury trials, unless my reporter was gone when I used the steno, with monitored DAR. I've done a 7-day medical malpractice trial that this court reviewed, presumably reading the transcripts, with monitor DAR. I wasn't smart enough when I started to think that I should have anything else. I inherited the system from my predecessor, who used it 3 years before I did, and I've used it the whole time with no problems. I have not had from an appellate judge, from an appellate clerk, from a staff attorney in the Court of Appeals, a complaint about the quality of the transcript. The only complaint I have had was from a pro se litigant who claimed that the transcript didn't say what she said, but that particular litigant wasn't particularly connected to reality in any case, and my reporter burned the disc, sent her the actual audio recording, which said what the transcript said, and that was the end of the question. It is the, in my mind, indisputable functional equivalent of stenographic court reporting. It is a different approach, using different equipment with different pratfalls, but it is, in the end, the functional equivalent. I have a court reporter who is my personal appointee, an appointment I jealously guard, and a person who is likewise my confidant, who was my legal assistant for 10 years before now being my court reporter. It is critical to make Monitor DAR work, I believe, that you have a full-time court reporter, and I'll describe here in a minute some of the logistics, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I also believe that unmonitored DAR, though, has a place. And Justice Bradley, I understand your concerns about primarily and those words, and those are real. But emergent situations, I had a situation last week. This is some of the flexibility that monitored DAR gives you. My reporter needed to leave at 3:30. We didn't have anything on the calendar. And she had some appointment with her child or something. Well, something came up. We need to schedule a hearing at 4 o'clock. When she left at 3:30, she sat the clerk down, the minute clerk, flipped it on, told her how to flip it off. Was it unmonitored? Yes. Was there some risk in that? Yes. It was a bond hearing. Did it need to be done? Yes. We did it under emergent circumstances. It worked. Low transcript thing. I think unmonitored DAR, when used with discretion, and clearly there needs to be some rules about it, when used with discretion, has its place in making sure that our courts run. My reporter, Nicole, sits in court. Absent that exception I just told you about, she is there. She sits behind a CCAP-provided computer. She looks at a screen where she can see some little bars bouncing up and down, each of which represent a microphone. There are individual microphones, table mics, at counsel table, on the bench, on the witness stand. Those are mobile. They're wired, but they're mobile. There are wireless mics for if you have more counsel than normal. You give out some wireless mics. There are lapel mics. Nicole runs the courtroom. I don't do anything different than a judge that has a stenographic court reporter. I sit there and do judge things. Nicole runs it. She makes sure that the inputs are happening. She can see that those microphones are coming in. She wears a headset. She can hear what the computer hears. If the computer's not getting it, she knows it in 3 seconds. It's a 3-second delay until she gets it. She stops the proceeding, corrects the problem, whatever it is, and we go on. I have not had in 10 years any significant disruption in my court to get the work done that we need to get done. It works. Nicole runs the courtroom also in the manner that a steno does. Speak up, spell that, handles all of that. She makes the log notes that Ms. Bisquette was referring to. If she needs a spelling, she types that in independently. What comes of that then is an electronic recording of everything that is said. Each of these microphones are on a separate channel. And so if people are talking over each other, we discourage that, obviously. Nicole scolds them, obviously. But if that doesn't work, which it doesn't always, she is able, through the transcription process, to turn off one of the mics. Two people are talking at one time. You turn off mic two, you listen to mic four. You turn off mic four, you listen to mic two. Listen to them both so you get the proper overlap in the transcript. Her transcripts I'm probably not the best person to ask because I don't read them as much as others. Her transcripts are indistinguishable, save the certification at the end, from a stenographic transcript. The transcription process is, in the first instance, a longhand typing process. Nicole has a transcription device in the classic law office sense, the same thing she used in our law office. She listens to the recording, and she types, and she types, and she types. Types it out longhand, corrects it. There is some technology that she uses some, I'm not sure how frequently. It's a mask that she wears. It's voice recognition software. Listens to the recording, speaks it into the voice recognition software, which generates the first draft transcript. The problem with voice recognition software in the courtroom is, of course, all of our voices are different, and they haven't developed the software to do that. But this software recognizes Nicole. She takes the verbal variation out, speaks it into the voice recorder to generate the rough draft, and then has to be corrected from there. That is the process for creating monitored DAR record that we have successfully employed for 10 years.
Very good.
Any questions?
So you said she'll actually stop the proceedings, and will she have people repeat something the way
Yes, sure.
Get it.
Exactly okay. The same as you would have in a stenographic courtroom. There was the question from Justice Bradley about telephone and video. We do telephone. We do video. It picks up the same as my ear picks it up. These microphones are hypersensitive. And it comes in through our courtroom loudspeaker system, which is separate. But the microphone picks up the same as my ears pick it up. Nicole transcribes things from video and telephone exactly the same as live testimony.
And because they're hypersensitive, I take it when you have a sidebar or something that isn't on the record that she turns it off?
She can. The beauty of it is that if you have a sidebar and the lawyer's wearing a lapel mic, we have an actual record of exactly what's said at the sidebar. But that brings up a point. She can turn the microphones down. If you've got a noisy kid on this side of the courtroom, and you can afford to, she can turn that down, shut that noise out of her computer. If you have a soft-spoken person, she can turn that microphone up. Each one of those microphones is distinct, and she can control each one of them. She came to it with no training other than being a legal assistant who typed for probably 6 hours a day, 5 days a week for 10 years. And who had a rudimentary understanding, and I probably understate her brilliance, a rudimentary understanding of the technology. She's good with technology. I think that's an important aspect of a good DAR monitor. You have to be comfortable interfacing with the equipment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge Jason Russell.
Chief Justice Rogensack, other justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, thank you for hearing my testimony here today and for selecting me as the Chief Judge of the Second District of Wisconsin, which is the southeastern corner of the state, Walworth, Racine, and Kenosha counties. We have 22 judges, and we are fortunate at this point to have 21 stenographic court reporters and one mask writer, which I think you just heard about. We have one district floater, and we also have another floater who is available every so often. However, last year, we had three court reporters retire or leave, including my own, who was a court reporter for over 40 years with the Wisconsin court system. CCAP tells me that 63% of my reporters are eligible for retirement right now. They could leave. Take wonderful retirement benefits, as my old court reporter did, and actually make more money retired than he does after working 40 years. And so what that requires is flexibility. We have four court reporters who have already given their notices either to judges or to the district court administrator that they plan on retiring this year. I was fortunate in my case that I was able to find a stenographic court reporter from one of the only 56 schools left down in Chicago, and I was fortunate she lived in Kenosha and wanted to stay in the area. But one of our other judges in Kenosha waited over
almost 6 months to find the mask writer that currently serves her courtroom. As Chief Judge, one of the things that is most important to me is serving my fellow judges in my district. And that means not canceling court, but also understanding that very valuable relationship between a court reporter and a judge. But the fact of the matter is, with the coming shortage to the district, it is important for me to have flexibility so we don't have to cancel court. And that flexibility comes in this rule petition. I understand, Justice Bradley, about the term primarily. I've never taken a court reporter or had my DCA take a court reporter out of a judge's courtroom without actually talking to that judge. But some things happen when that judge is not available. The statute, 751, I'm sorry, I don't have the full site, but the 751 statute talks about the duty of the judge to find the replacement. I'll give you a perfect example that just happened 2 weeks ago. One of the court reporters across the hall, who I've known for many years, sadly was involved in a car accident on the way to work. So she was now unavailable. And at that very point in time, her judge was on vacation. Now, we were going to have her rescheduled to cover another area because he was on vacation, but now, right away, we have to switch places. We have to make sure that there is coverage for that other judge. My district court administrator, along with the DAA, works to coordinate the calendars of the judges and of the court reporters. Court reporters, stenographic court reporters, are an amazing, amazing resource that we have. And one of the things about flexibility that I don't think we've talked a lot about is that of vacations and flexibility for the lives of our court reporters. If we get to a point in time where judges are unwilling to allow the movement of court reporters, as a chief judge, I may have to at some point say, if no one's willing to be flexible and the district court reporter is elsewhere, if your court reporter takes vacation or you approve vacation, your court is shut down. I don't have the ability to provide you a way to take you to the record. And then it's going to be, well, if I take my vacation, then my court reporter has to take their vacation. And that's not right either. What we have to understand is as people's lives change, as we have all these people who retire, we're going to receive more and more people who are in the younger times of their life, who can only take vacations in summer because their kids go to school. They can't take a January week off or a November week off when we go to conference. And so it's important, I think, in this flexibility to give the chief judge, along with the district court administrator, the ability to make those 7 a.m. in the morning, 6 a.m. in the morning, 9 o'clock on a Sunday night telephone call, my son's got the flu, I can't make it in tomorrow, someone's got to cover my court, to give us the flexibility to move court reporters so that if we have to use emergency dar, which we have, and I've authorized it a number of times, in situations where are we going to cover a temporary placement hearing or are we going to cover a jury trial with a stenographic reporter? It's harder to say, sorry, jurors, go home. Sorry for taking your day off of work and interrupting your life in this important duty, but we need you to just stop today because we don't have a court reporter. I'll take any questions that you have, but thank you very much.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge James Babler.
Good morning, Chief Justice Rogensack and Justices. I'm Jim Babler, judge from Barron County, and I come to tell you about an innovative way to attract stenographic court reporters. About 3 years ago, no one applied when Judge Bill Gabler from Eau Claire had a court reporter opening. He decided to take a chance, and he hired a stenographic student as a DAR reporter. Now, think about this. If you can't attract a court reporter to Eau Claire, a vibrant, growing college town in northwest Wisconsin, how do you attract a stenographic court reporter to Barron County, turkey capital of Wisconsin? And it's 200 miles north of Portage, which is known as where the north begins. Now, for 14 years, I had a stenographic court reporter. But a little over a year ago, my court reporter moved to Superior when Judge Glonick had an opening. And we advertised. No one applied. Now, you might say, how can that be? Babbler's a dream judge for court reporters. But it was true. So another reporter told me they knew of a student who was doing online stenographic reporting from Madison Area Technical College. And it so happened that that student was from Barron, and my wife had her in kindergarten. And so I hired her as a DAR reporter while she finished school and passed all the tests. And I have to tell you, I can report that the experience has been extremely positive for both of us. My court reporter, I call her my court reporter, is on track for graduation and certification, and I'll end up with a stenographic court reporter. So the use of DAR in my courtroom allows a student to get real life experience, allows her to gain the speed she needs for certification, and she produces actual court transcripts. And you also have to think of DAR as another benefit for our experienced court reporters. It helps those who have those repetitive stress injuries, so it gives them a break where you have, you know, if you have intake court, you know, traffic court with 150 people showing up, or those that might be suffering from arthritis. And I have to tell you, my original concerns about the DAR system have been dispelled. I remember a particular jury trial where the defense attorney objected to the DA's question, and the DA replied, I didn't say that. So my court reporter found that in the DAR system, played it back to the entire courtroom, and the DA said exactly what the defense attorney objected to. And that was the real clincher for me, because it's not just the reporter's notes. You hear the actual words spoken. Now, I have to tell you, though, that using the DAR system does require a judge to pay particular attention to the attorneys and witnesses speaking into the microphone, and also making sure that the record reflects the name of those who are speaking. But isn't that what a good judge does anyway? Finally, I tell you that the need for court reporters in Northwest Wisconsin is great. While I joke a little bit about Barron County, there are other counties in Northwest Wisconsin more remote and with fewer amenities to attract court reporters. And then finally,
Does that mean the judges aren't quite as nice as you? Is that what you mean? Fewer amenities?
I'll let you decide that.
Okay. Primarily so, I guess.
Yeah. And I know there's some questions about the actual mechanics of the system. We have a modern courthouse. So we were able, using county funds for about $1,000 for courtroom, to make sure that the system went right into our audio system. So we capture the phone and the video directly. So it's a direct system. There's no extras there. Really have found it to be a wonderful recording system. Mm-hmm. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Congratulations to your county for having the foresight to be able to put all that together.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions? Thank you very much.
I just want to learn how to be a dream judge.
Okay, Patrick Brumman.
You're well on your way, Dan.
Chief Justice and Justice of the Court, thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to you today on this important topic. I'm Pat Brummond. I'm the District Court Administrator of the 7th Judicial District, a member of PAST and the most recent MIC in the Record Committee. And I am on the front lines of the stenographic court reporter shortage crisis. District 7 is comprised of 15 counties, primarily rural counties in the southwest part of the state. We have 22 judges and 22 and a half court reporters. The half court reporter is my district floater, half-time person. And have virtually zero freelance court reporter resources in my area. What this means is, when I'm fully staffed, we have the personnel to cover a half a week of an official court reporter's absence. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how it works. So in District 7, if a court reporter needs leave or desires to take leave, they talk to their supervisor, their appointing judge, and the judge says, yay or nay, generally yay, because they like to have a good relationship with their court reporter. Once that's done, they contact my office and request coverage. This coverage could be 3 weeks out. A lot of times they want an answer, who's going to be here on that third week when I start my trial calendar. I don't have an answer for them. I won't have an answer for them. I likely won't have an answer for them until the week before, sometimes the day before, because we're constantly searching calendars to try and find a court that is going to be down that matches with that need of court reporter coverage. Again, we can cover a half a week without using another judge's court reporter. One of the reasons the court administrator's office is able to have success in finding coverage for court reporters who take leave is that we're constantly monitoring calendars throughout our district. It's not that we're looking or checking up on the judges to find out who's in and who's out. We're looking for court reporters. And oftentimes, when we find a court reporter who's available because their trial folded or the judge has education or whatever, that court reporter could be hours away from where we need them. Again, rural district, about 4.5 hours from tip to tip. So what we do often is we will have that court reporter move to the next adjoining county, and with the cooperation of the judge and the court reporter from that next county, they move to the next county, and then the third judge and court reporter, the judge moves from that county to where we actually need the coverage. And these challenges are exacerbated as we go into any type of situation where we have a vacancy, we have a long-term illness, we have vacation season, family type things that come on. It makes it very difficult. We are on the edge all the time in order to try and keep the courts operating in the 7th Judicial District. I often get requests for reserve judges. That's easy. I can always get you a reserve judge, but I have a difficult time finding a court reporter, so doing extra calendars is almost non-existent. There have been a lot of talk about the recruitment of stenographic court reporters. I won't belabor that. I think the others hit it pretty well. We're waiting months and months to fill some of these positions. And it was envisioned that the judges would be able to choose who they would have as their stenographic court reporter. When you have one qualified applicant, you're not choosing. You're selecting the person that's available. DAR. We've talked a lot about DAR and monitored digital court reporting. In Wisconsin right now, we have 10 digital court reporters dispersed through all corners of the state. Those digital court reporters are the personal appointees of their judges, like stenographic court reporters. They are responsible for capturing the record and transcribing that record upon request. They do it with different tools, but they have the same responsibility. And as Judge Day said in his court, it's virtually the same kind of thing. It's just done differently. The other thing I would add is, I guess I'll skip that because we have time limits here. To conclude, I mean, the court reporter shortage is on us. It's on us in District 7. It's happening right now, today. The chief judge and the district court administrator, because functionally we're the one that's doing the work, my chief judge has a full calendar. He's not going to stop his calendar to try and find a court reporter for somebody over in the next county. So functionally, district court administrator is the proper authority for managing these resources in our current situation and as we go into the future. And I think this petition goes a long way to make that happen. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Any questions?
Are we short judges?
I'm sorry?
Are we short judges?
No.
We can handle it with the judges we have, but
I didn't understand the question exactly. I mean, we have judges in a judgeship bill. We have counties that have high need, if that's what
you're asking. Yep.
We do. I have three counties that have high need that we're looking for judges for.
Yeah, and that's not really our issue today, right, whether we need more judges, because I think we've needed judges in a number of counties for a number of years, if not a decade or more.
Does it affect the issue we're dealing with today? the number of judges if we increase judges?
Right now, the issue today in terms of the workload for the judges, it affects what we can do in terms of providing assistance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it's difficult for me, again, with the court reporter shortage, to put an extra calendar together to give that judge some relief. If the judge happens to be gone, I can fill in as long as I can use the court reporter.
Yeah, it probably means that judges are on the record more because they're doing more work and less follows through if they're covering the work of a judge and a half. They have a lot of work to do, so there's probably less availability, as I think about it. Good question. Less availability for court reporters to be able to move somewhere else, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if I think about where we get the court reporters available to move to another spot, they're generally not in the high volume or the high workload counties. Those are generally staying where they are because of the need of that county.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Jacqueline Ripno.
Good morning. My name is Jacqueline Ripno, and I am the president of the Wisconsin Court Reporters Association. I am also a court reporting captioning instructor at Lakeshore Technical College for the past 6 years and have been a freelance reporter for the past 30 years. The Wisconsin Court Reporters Association would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak today regarding Rule Petition 1901. WCRA understands that circuit courts need to have an alternate means of making the record when there is not a stenographic reporter available. And we also agree with Judge Koshnick that a blended approach with stenographic and DAR systems, when those systems are utilized correctly, are an appropriate means to preserve the record. I would like to address two concerns that WCRA has with the rule petition as it has been submitted and request that the petition be amended to reflect these concerns. Our first concern is that the language in the proposed rule petition should be amended to provide that stenographic court reporters are the primary means of making the record and monitored DAR is a backup when no stenographic court reporter is available. We are concerned that if this is not clarified, digital equipment will begin replacing stenographic court reporters as a cost-saving measure. Benefits of stenographic court reporter include the ability to provide real-time, instantaneous readback, and efficient transcript production. Turnaround time on a transcript for a stenographic court...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
sure.
I shall. Somewhere in our stuff, is there a statement of what you're proposing? Did you send a written statement in?
Yes, we did.
Okay. How is it addressed? I'm trying to find it in my materials. Which
We sent in the letter dated March 18th, 2019. I don't think we...
I think it's tab 6, Justice Abel.
We did not recommend the exact wording. We'd leave that to you to decide exactly, because I'm not privy to how statutes need to be written.
I think it's tab 10.
Okay, there's one I know on 6, too, so 10 also? Okay, thank
NCRA
you.
Is tab 6.
Right, okay. Your letter would be 10,
mm-hmm.
Letter dated March 18th.
Please, go ahead.
Okay.
We're just trying to look through our materials.
Okay, thank you.
So we can follow you more sensibly.
Right.
Okay. Benefits of stenographic court reporting include the ability to provide real-time, instantaneous readback, and efficient transcript production. Turnaround time on a transcript for a stenographic court reporter is roughly 1-to-1, 1 hour of writing time to 1 hour for transcript production. For a digital recording, it is roughly 1 hour of audio recording to 4 to 5 hours for transcript production. Our second concern is that the language in the rule petition should be amended to state that all DAR systems will have a separate and trained person monitoring the proceedings. This person's sole job needs to be confidence monitoring of the recording system. The digital reporter needs to be a trained AAERT reporter. There have been many cases in Wisconsin to date where unmonitored systems have led to inadequate or unusable transcripts. I will cite only a few for you now. In Jackson County, in the case of State of Wisconsin versus Sammy J. Harris.
Excuse me, just a minute.
Yep.
Justice
Abrams. Does the court have
a
copy of what you want, that is the amendment you would want?
I do not.
Okay, well, I think the court will work off an amendment. We could draft it ourselves, which doesn't mean it's going to be what you want.
Correct.
Or propose, or you can draft it, which means we can look at it. We might take it, we might not, but at least there's something that you can submit.
We can definitely work on that with our attorney.
So tell me again what you're going to submit.
We can submit the language to you that we would like to amend with our first concern to amend to make sure that we are the primary, stenographic reporters are the primary means, and DAR is used as a backup. And our second concern is that DAR systems have a separate and trained person monitoring the proceedings. That means one-to-one. That person's sole responsibility is to monitor the proceedings that are going on with the headset and exactly like has been explained previous.
Those are the two aspects of this. Those
correct.
Are that you're talking about.
Okay. Correct.
I think that would be good if, as far as I'm concerned, if you submit the language you want.
Okay.
I was just going to ask. I personally loved my court reporters. I felt like my JA was my right hand and my court reporter was my left hand, and I wouldn't have wanted anything other than the people that I had working with me. What I'm hearing from the judges is that they're having a tough time finding people to fill those spots, and so some people have even had to resort to people who are not yet fully trained. Your proposal, and I might have misunderstood that.
No, that is correct. In fact, she was one of our students.
Okay. So are there enough people to go around for your proposal to be implemented? Stenographers, which I think would be most judges' first choice, but maybe it's just my 12 years ago, 20 years ago experience as a
right.
trial judge. But that would have been my first choice, I think, for sure, and was, even though Judge Stork was doing a version of DAR at the time. So, I mean, it was happening back then. It just wasn't something I was more interested in than having a person who was my stenographer. Are there enough people to go around to fill the proposal that you make? If we have the rules reflect that, what happens to the judges who've had to resort to students coming in? And
well, our proposal is that if there is a stenographic reporter available to fill that position, we would want them to fill it first, and then DAR would be used as a backup if there's nobody there to fill that position.
Part of why I loved my stenographer so much was because we had a great working relationship.
Correct.
It is really important for those people to want to work together. I mean, maybe a stenographer wouldn't want to work for a particular judge, or maybe the judge wouldn't want to work with that stenographer. Does this impact in any way the judge's ability to select the person? I mean, this is a person who's basically an at-will employee.
Correct.
So does it affect in any way the judge's ability to hire the person that the judge would like to hire?
No. It would be what's happening in other states is that as for cost saving measures, they are pushing out stenographic reporters or not replacing them, putting in unmonitored DAR systems. I believe somebody had mentioned the remote monitoring. So you have one person monitoring four courtrooms. And that's what we want to try to prevent, because what's happening is in some of those states, Kansas is one. They have now gone back and said live stenographic reporters have to take certain cases that come through, and these cases are fine for our unmonitored DAR or our remotely monitored DAR.
Okay.
How would your preference work in the situation described by Mr. Brummond, in which his district, being 4.5 hours from end to end, if there is a vacancy in a court, they have a temporary need for a court reporter, he has to kind of do a domino reassignment all across the district to get that filled. If Dar is an immediately available option, he could just drop Dar into that courtroom without reassigning everybody else in the district. Would
Correct.
Would your language,
yeah.
your proposed...
As long as there's a... I'm sorry.
Would your proposed language not allow Mr. Brumman to just drop the Dar into the courtroom that actually needs it?
No, they could drop the Dar into that courtroom as long as they had a solely separate person that was monitoring, whose job it was to monitor that system.
Okay, so then I'm looking at your letter. To the extent that you want an amendment to the petition that requires the stenographic reporter to be the first option, it would seem to not allow Mr. Brumman to drop the Dar into the courtroom that actually needs it. You would have to take the stenographic reporter from the county next door, reassign that, and then on and on and on until the last one's up where you don't have anyone to fill in the spot.
In that instance, it would probably be more efficient for him to have the Dar system in there. I think, you know, with the wording of this, it's going to be much like Judge Koshnick said, this is like a preliminary thing, and we're just putting our comments out to make sure that if there is a stenographic reporter that's in that position, that she is not replaced with a Dar and let go. That's kind of what's been happening across the nation right now.
And what would happen, and I don't know if this would occur or not, but what would happen if a judge said, you know, my regular court reporter is out. I just want a Dar. I don't want another court reporter for that short period of time. I just want the Dar while she's out.
That's happened also.
But would your proposed amendment to the petition allow that?
I guess all these circumstances would have to be taken into account. We haven't thought that far. You know, this is just a preliminary, as Judge Koshnick said, this is just kind of a preliminary. All these scenarios would have to be looked at. I know on the Making the Record Committee, Sherry Piontek, who was speaking next, I think all these scenarios were talked about, and she would probably have more knowledge on these questions that you're asking right now, and she would probably be much better able to answer them because she was there having the discussions with everybody involved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you very much for coming in to see us. Chair Piontek, we've heard you've got things to tell us. Good. We're looking forward to hearing them.
My name is Sherry Piontek, and I'm a past president of the Wisconsin Court Reporters Association. I was an official court reporter appointed by Judge Mark Hammer for Branch 5 in Brown County. I've been a steno court reporter for over 36 years. I'd like to take this opportunity to respond to some of my concerns regarding Rule Petition 1901. I was part of the Making the Record Committee representing WCRA. The committee's goal was to come up with a plan for taking of the record when there are not enough stenographic reporters to fill the vacancies. Since this is a significant change to the Supreme Court rules and state statutes, I believe it is imperative that we be as specific as possible as we change our statutes to reflect our findings. One of the committee's goals was to find the correct word to incorporate the steno court reporters, voice reporters, and DAR reporters into the statutes. We came to the conclusion of selecting the words, quote, court reporter, end quote, to encompass all three types of reporters. With that said, since the DAR reporter is a fairly new job title and job description, there are very few DAR reporters in the state of Wisconsin at this moment to hire to fill these positions. Due to the limited availability of DAR reporters in Wisconsin, my concern is in Judge Koshnick's March 25, 2019 response to the comments to the rule petition, where he states on page 2 that, quote, in emergency circumstances when a digital court reporter is unavailable, the report recommends that the DAR system be monitored by a clerk, end quote. The concern is you will have the emergency circumstances from the initiation of these statutes. The clerk will be doing the job and no further need to hire a DAR reporter. Without language in the Supreme Court rules to clarify what constitutes monitored digital audio recording, it will become a daily occurrence that the clerks will run the equipment. This does not allow for the correct confidence monitoring required for the digital audio recording. As a result of the lack of a DAR reporter, the DAR transcripts will be assigned to the steno court reporters to prepare. My proposal is the transcript preparation should be done on a voluntary basis if there is no DAR reporter.
What do you do if there's a court reporter, a steno reporter, that does a recording and then she becomes ill and can't do the transcription and there's an appeal of what has occurred at the circuit court level? What do you do with getting that kind of a transcript transcribed?
I can tell you. Many years ago, since I started way back when, we had like the steno machines that just had the paper in it. Then they progressed to the paper and SD card in it. Now they have an SD card in it, and on that SD card, it'll put our audio and our steno notes. And every year we have to provide our dictionary to the DCA. So when illnesses like that or death, unexpected death, they have our dictionary of how we write our words. So that gets sent to that court reporter so there is no indiscretions of how we type our words.
Okay, so if someone is unavailable, then that person may write defendant using a different shorthand than you might. And so
correct.
You need the dictionary of that person before you can transcribe their notes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You bet. Every branch has a different rotation of workload assignments, some requiring more transcripts than other branches, like felony, OWIs, drug courts, compared to the juvenile, family, probate, and guardianship branches. I urge the DCAs and chief judges to consider that issue when assigning DAR recordings to the steno court reporters. The DAR recordings should not be outsourced to someone not employed by the state of Wisconsin and not trained in transcript production. In my opinion, it is unethical for a steno court reporter to certify that transcripts produced from DAR recordings are verbatim. We take our oath very seriously when we attach our certification page at the end of every transcript. My suggestion is the statute should say, the certification page will certify this transcript to the best of my ability after listening to the DAR recordings. To ensure continuity in the statutes, Judge Koshnick proposes in his March 25, 2019 letter on pages 4 and 5 that the phrase, quote, reporter's notes, end quote, should be changed to court reporter's verbatim record.
Could I interrupt for just a moment?
Yes.
Hi. I'm interested about the certification.
Okay.
So I practiced law many years before coming here, lots of trials and depositions. It's rare to look at a transcript that doesn't say at some point unintelligible, right? So how would that be different between a live stenographic recording and a DAR?
Well, live stenographic reporters, we shouldn't allow inaudibles in there. That's why we interrupt. So that I've never seen inaudibles in there by a steno.
It's unintelligible.
And I
saw it a lot.
Okay. So your question is, how is that different than a DAR?
Right.
Okay.
So apparently, when the stenographer went to prepare the transcript, there was something in the stenographic recording where she just couldn't make out what it was. And it seemed to be the same kind of possibility making a transcript from a DAR. So I'm wondering why the certification would be different.
Well, the certification is to totally 100% assure that you don't have those in there. But I understand that can happen from time to time. When I do my real time up to my judge, if he sees something comes up inaudible, he catches it right away and then he asks. So my certification, if I don't interrupt as well, make sure my certification says it's 100% accurate. Steno reporters can be certified on different levels, like coming out of school, and then you can work your way up to those other certifications. DAR reporters right now don't have to do any form of certification, but if you do go through AAERT, they have a certification program that you can do on your own. And in our opinion, we encourage them to do that, but we can't make them do that yet. But if you're going to be very diligent at it, I think some of them will proceed to go on for that certification. But that's done through AAERT and not at the same places where we can get our certification. They're different entities.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
So do you have language that you want to have in there, or is that putting you on the spot too much?
Nope, I have it coming right up here.
Is it in your written submission, too?
Not my proposed language. It is not. It's just in my speech here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Where it's, I would suggest using the word, quote, court reporter's record instead of the verbatim.
What section of the petition are you on?
Well, I think verbatim is used throughout.
I think
verbatim language is used throughout.
So this
and
is a global change.
The verbatim part is going to be in SDR 6109.
So what do you want to do with the word verbatim? Going to keep
what
it?
I would like it to say is...
Court reporter record? Is that what you just said?
I would like it to say original notes. And then in the other section where it says eliminate the word verbatim for the exact same reasons, because our certification page covers the verbatim aspect of it. I don't feel verbatim should be in the statutes like that, because ethically, court reporters can say it's verbatim, but the DAR, since they don't have any form of certification, I don't think that should be in there saying it's verbatim, because they can't say it's verbatim.
What do you think it should say?
I think it should just say court record.
Okay, and where exactly are
court
you?
Reporter.
So we can be clear, because if you look at the
okay, I referenced
petition.
All the Judge Koshnick's letter, so could I put
no,
it?
And the letter, do you have the actual petition with the sections so we know which?
She might be starting at 7101 sub 2. I could be wrong,
what?
But...
7101
sub 2.
Okay.
A verbatim record of all proceedings shall be made except for the following.
It's everywhere, verbatim record.
Yeah.
So
every time the words verbatim used, you want court reporter record instead of verbatim? Because it's also in 7101.3 and probably other spots. Yeah, it is. Definitely.
Yeah, where it would say verbatim record, I would propose court reporter record.
Because that includes all records.
Without
and then where would you have original notes be?
I would have original notes.
I don't think you define verbatim record anywhere.
Yes, because in, I know I was referring to Judge Koshnick's letter, but it says wherever it said in quotes reporter's notes, they would propose it to be changed court reporter's verbatim record, and I think it should still just say reporter's record.
Court reporter record.
How would this work? 7103 sub 3 says the verbatim record includes all of the following. The original notes of a stenographic court reporter, original voice recording of a voice writer, and an audio recording of any part of a proceeding that is on the record and made as the primary means of taking the verbatim record. So if we changed verbatim to be a court reporter, then aren't we just eliminating this petition altogether?
Right.
I guess my first gut reaction would be depends how you view it. But I don't think so. I have a problem with saying verbatim for another specific reason. If we allow DAR reporters as an alternate means of the record, It opens the door for WCRA to include them as members of our association. And our bylaws say verbatim, and diary reporters are not verbatim. So I have a problem with the word verbatim.
Okay, but if
that reason.
I mean, that is what we're at. That's kind of what the whole petition is about, is an alternative way of creating a verbatim record. So if your issue is with the use of DAR, then you're just opposed to the petition flat out, right?
But I'm not. Okay. I think if DAR is used correctly, it'll be okay.
Okay. But DAR is a way of producing a verbatim record.
My concern with verbatim is when you go back and you listen to a tape and you have that noise and stuff in the back, it's almost impossible to certify that's a verbatim record. Whereas in the steno, we stop. And I know Judge Day said Nicole can do that, and she does a really good job at that. But it also piggybacks onto the concept of monitored DAR. And that's where I have my concern, is on the monitored DAR, not so much on DAR being an alternate means of reporting court proceedings.
So your concern primarily is then that the monitoring is competent?
Yes.
Okay.
And one-on-one.
And what?
One-on-one, the DAR reporter being in the courtroom, because they're in the petition where it says under emergency circumstances, I can see that happening where there's not a reporter available, so we're going to put the DAR on. There's no DAR reporter, and we've already started this already with a dilemma because there's not enough DAR reporters in the state. So then that means it'll domino down to the clerk to operate the equipment. And with the true concept of confidence monitoring, you're supposed to have a headset on. So I don't know how a clerk can maybe put one ear on, one ear off, and listen to what's going on in the courtroom, do his or her in-court processing, mark exhibits, do all the telephone calls and the bail bonds. I think that's too much for one person to do, to have confidence monitoring requirement.
Right. And wouldn't the judge in the courtroom be concerned about having a complete record?
Yes.
Okay. And so I would think the judge is going to be motivated to ensure that whoever's monitoring the DAR system is doing it in a competent way, wouldn't he?
It depends on the volume of what you're having on your calendar that day. Sometimes when you do the calendar call and if it's all on that traffic, they just go in go mode and they're not paying attention. Not that that's wrong, but it's that other person's responsibility to make sure the record is being taken correctly. Now, if you have it in a hearing where your docket isn't that full, I think the judge would pay much more careful attention to it. It's just the volume dictates, I think, your monitoring.
One of my concerns as I hear your comments, and you made some reference to certification and you focused on verbatim language a bit and explained that, but I understand your real concern is that without the proper training and without the dedicated, I'll use that term, or one-on-one person there, that you lack confidence that you will get a correct record.
Exactly.
That's what you're talking about.
But exactly.
Unless you have those two situations trained and one-on-one, because you said DAR, they could say verbatim, but because of lack of training, they can't really say verbatim. That's
exactly
what you said.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's exactly it. And when some of the other comments were made, you were talking about that word primarily. And we had very spirited discussions on our Making the Record committee regarding that word and its implications. But that was the only word we could come up with that would make it fit for the judicial appointment by the judge to the court reporter and still allowing them to fill in other courts. Right now, as it is, mainly real-time reporters are the only ones that get relocated because to follow the ADA Act. But this would make it more available to make sure that the more important hearings like the felonies and stuff get covered by a live steno versus the DAR. And that was the word we could only come up with.
Thank you very much.
On that. Did you have any other questions? Or is that it?
I'm sorry to take your time, but on the basis of what you said and what you've heard here, does any of this language that we've been given as to text the proposed changes need to be modified?
I did not like the word extreme
circumstances. Pardon me?
I did not like the word extreme circumstances because to me that seemed like a catch-all phrase.
Yep.
To and handle
that's
anything.
Not defined anywhere. Is that right? Extreme
no, it's
circumstances.
Not. It is not defined.
What would you substitute? Do you have a suggestion?
My suggestion would be, and we talked about this at Making the Record Committee, to have some kind of guideline set up, like a bullet point checklist, to have that done.
Oh,
but since that list hasn't been created, we can't insert that in the statutes yet.
Under
so under
following circumstances, including
yes,
blah,
and then follow
blah,
the right pecking order. Right. And my only other concern I had, too, was in the... when you're talking about that remote monitoring for like four courts to one person, I understand that concept is being tossed around for in the up north rural areas. The only problem they're encountering right now on a technical standpoint is the internet availability up there because there's so many trees and it doesn't work. And when you do remote monitoring like that, everything is videoed, and I have a huge concern with people's privacy for like juvenile, probate, guardianship, TPR hearings, and I just would like it to be double, triple checked against the open records law in that regard.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
well,
you.
Many years ago, I was in the District of Columbia, and they had recordings made in each of their courtrooms, and there must have been, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 courtrooms, all district D.C. courtrooms, and they had one person who sort of listened in periodically on each of them to make sure it was working and going. And I found that unusual from what I had seen in other courtrooms around the country. And so I talked to them about it, and they said it worked.
What's funny sometimes about that equipment is it'll say on the dash that it's going, but unless you have the headset on, it can be a malfunction in another part of the circuit board to that. So that's why the confidence monitoring is there, because the board could all say it's working, and it's not there.
Can one person monitor four courts that way?
It has been done that way in other states right now, but I do believe it depends on the volume. Like, if you have small court calendars, I think you can monitor a couple courtrooms at the same time. But if you're videographing it, that's the problem to me in the open records law. But it can work in the other instances.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
David Wambach?
As a trial attorney with 25 years of experience, thousands of cases litigated, over 130 jury trials, as someone who comes before you with 3.5 years on the circuit court bench, I bring a blended perspective. In my career, just so you can have a little context, I tried and I believe succeeded in embracing both as a practitioner and in the court room and as a judge, any technology that enhanced, and I emphasize that word, enhanced the quality of justice. I believe the current rule as proposed will erode, not today, not tomorrow, but over time, erode the quality of justice in Wisconsin.
Why?
Because...
So you're opposing this rule.
I oppose specifically 71.01 sub 3 71. As proposed.
Go ahead, tell me it again.
71.01 sub 3 as proposed.
And that's the section that takes out the development of rules for alternative means? Is that the one that I recall?
It's the one which places a verbatim record by a stenographer,
right,
as well as voice reporting and monitored digital audio recording, all on the same footing. It simply says may and does not prioritize among them.
Do you want to read, just for the record, 71013, so everyone knows what you're talking about?
Yes, and then I will follow with the language I propose.
Okay. Amen. Just a minute.
Currently, the proposal.
What are you going to give us? 71013 is what he's looking
for. Okay, got it.
Currently, it reads the verbatim record.
The sentence before that. What about that? The director of state court shall
develop.
It's
struck in the proposal.
That's taken out.
Right. That's why I did not read it.
Right.
Starting again, the proposal is the verbatim record may be made by stenographic reporting, voice reporting, monitored digital audio recording, or other means approved by the director of state court, period. The language I propose is the verbatim record shall be made primarily by stenographic reporting, period. When stenographic reporting is not available as the primary means, voice reporting, monitored digital audio recording, or other means are approved, period. What that does then is creates a hierarchy among the methods, but does not in any way prohibit something other than stenographic reporting to supplement. Yes?
As I said, I like having a stenographer in court. I like that as a trial judge. I wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way, even though other people did. The problem with, if there is a problem, one problem might be, I mean, it is the judge's call. The judge gets to hire this person. The judge does not have to hire a stenographer if the judge doesn't want that particular person to be their stenographer. And a judge can fire a stenographer at will for basically no reason at all if the judge doesn't want that stenographer. So how can we as a court say that judges' hands are tied and they must hire this person over another person, and we're going to require that by rule? How do we do that and stay in our lane?
This court's overarching responsibility is ensuring that there is a quality of justice, and that should be paramount over any individual player in the justice process, including circuit court judges, of which I was one, having the flexibility that they have now.
So let's just say, Judge Wambach, you're ready to hire your court reporter, and the one person who's available is someone that you just can't work with. I know that'd be an impossibility because you two are a dream judge. I'm absolutely convinced. But you just don't want to work with that person for whatever reason. You had run-ins in the past, or they just don't. Who knows? Who knows? You still would have to hire that person because that'd be the primary means. There's one court reporter, and that person kind of doesn't like to come to work and doesn't really like to work hard and doesn't really meet your work ethic, and that's the person you must hire even though you would prefer to do it differently. We are to require you to hire that one person.
What I proposed would require that. But your question really brings up what I believe has been a significant gap in the discussion. which is there's been a focus on those reporters who are leaving, the current need, and looking only at the number of students coming into the system. Well, the huge gap is all of the reporters who are in the private sector working right now. Hundreds of them are traveling around the state from one deposition to another. Many of them, if not all of them, as official, as certified reporters, having the ability to become official reporters.
I bet the you they gap, make a bit more money, though, than we pay them.
Absolutely. But I will say that when it comes again to the quality of justice, I, for one, am willing to pay however much it takes in order to ensure that there is a highest quality of justice that can be provided.
But private court reporters also get to say yes or no. When an attorney they often work for, and they generally get hooked up with several attorneys that do a lot of trial work, as I'm sure you are well aware, but if they want to be in Arizona in the winter for 2 months, they go ahead and do that. We can't have our court reporters decide they're going to take a two-month vacation in Arizona.
If the pay and benefits were such that we were attracting the best and brightest without reason, we'd have all of the court reporters that we need because we could compete with the private sector.
Remind me, they're state-paid, right, court reporters?
Right. They are state employees and
unlike
they're paid by
judicial
the state.
Assistants or clerks in the courtroom are county-paid.
Right.
The court reporters
then,
are state.
Right. That's a different wrinkle, too, to this, because judges are allowed to require the state to pay the person that they hire.
That's right.
For this. But we should tell them who they have to hire.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so the competing with the private market's really off the table, because you got to talk to the legislature about that, right?
It's not like the issue is here today. The language that I propose would allow for saying one is not available primarily as the means, and so it would be supplemented by DAR. And so, yes, I understand that the legislature would need to respond, but if there's the need, presumably the legislature will fill it. There are people who
lobby.
Might.
The legislature might look at this rule petition and say, they got to figure it out. They can do the DAR,
That's my precise concern, Justice Kelly, which is, given the language in... the language that says a judge should appoint, and given language which says these are the equal footing means, what that means is any judge who wished to, tomorrow, could fire their reporter after the day after the petition is approved, and then have DAR as their primary, there could be
Your Honor,
300 judges who
Your
have
Honor,
DAR.
Your Honor, why would they do that?
Well, why they might do that? I had to run for office both as a DA and a circuit judge. There are people who would like to say, I will be the fiscal conservative in my county, and I'm going to run against this judge who wants to have a appointed court reporter. I will save the county money.
Except it's not county money. So, I mean,
well, I'll save the state money. It's simply an argument that can be made to say, this is why I should be judge, or judges who are currently up for election can say, I'll be the one to save the state money. I'll be the one to demonstrate I'm a fiscal conservative. And that's why I will do that.
All right, so it seems like a dicey campaign strategy, but let's set that aside for just a moment. So if we were to adopt your idea of trying to get some market competition here, the way we would do that, it would seem, is put our courts at risk to get leverage over the legislature, right?
No, because the language I propose allows that if the legislature does not create the greater funds, then by nature, primarily it would not be the primary means available, and therefore you could supplement it. So, right. No, I'm not
proposing. So then you run into the problem that Justice Ziegler described, in which we start putting shackles on circuit court judges and telling them who they have to hire.
I understood the import of her question, and I recognize it, yes.
Well, I think it's a very interesting perspective that you bring to us, and you're right. None of the other witnesses that have testified, at least so far, have brought it up, and I very much appreciate your doing that. So often when we have rules petitions, we tend to hear what the petitioner wants and those that are directly opposed to the petitioner, and generally the reasons are pretty much one side or the other. So you give us a different perspective. I very much appreciate your coming.
And if I could just add a couple quick things on that litigator's perspective. Particularly in civil practice, litigators like the availability of daily transcripts. They're not going to be able to get daily transcripts under this system in order to, by the time someone is found, to be able to listen to the recording. You heard the ratio from your prior speaker, you know, 4 hours for every hour. In 8 hours of testimony, nobody's going to be able to get a daily out like a court reporter can. And the WAJ filed their comments indicating their concerns over the fact that they would not be able to get dailies under those circumstances. There's also, from the perspective of...
In that circumstance, though, if a litigant is really insistent on having dailies, they can bring in their own reporter, right?
Yes, they could. And that's an additional cost then to them as a litigant. Then, lastly, as a circuit court judge, many circuit court judges have real-time transcription available. I found it to be extremely valuable in, again, delivering the quality of justice in my courtroom. When I went to the judicial college, it was emphasized by everyone who talked to us, make your rulings from the bench. It's the most efficient way to deliver justice. It doesn't cause the litigants to have to come back and engender the expense of doing so. And then as I tried to practice what I had learned at Judicial College, I found that the quality of being able to look at things that I had highlighted while the real time was going on my screen gave me the ability to most cogently and accurately restate what was in the record, to be able to organize the thoughts and deliver the best quality of decision, which, if there's an appeal, will be subject to scrutiny.
Are all stenographers real-time now? Because back when I was a judge, they sure were not. In fact, the times we tried it out, it was like, whoa, that's not even close sometimes.
Well, real-time has come a long way.
Yeah.
Trust me, it is excellent. My real-time reporter was able to
But you had a real-time reporter. Not all reporters are real-time reporters.
That is correct, but that's the current trend, too. Most reporters are working toward becoming certified as real-time reporters and can still, even if not certified, provide real-time assistance to their judge and not violate their ethical rules.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Janet Harris.
Chief Judge and Justices, thank you. It's an honor to be here before you today. I'm appearing today on behalf of the American Association of Electronic Reporters and Transcribers. Interestingly enough, I grew up in Wisconsin, and I'm one of the co-founders of the association, and I'm happy to speak to you about certification for both certified electronic reporters and certified electronic transcribers. I also operated a company here, a digital reporter. I have 35 years of experience as an electronic video court reporter here in Wisconsin, under the radar for most of my career when I left in 2010 and got my computer science degree from Smith College. I'm now vice president of corporate development at eScribers, a nationwide court reporting and transcription company, We work with entire state court systems, federal contracts, state contracts throughout the country. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'll have a question then.
I'm sure you will.
And my question is this. I'm concerned about, as you could tell from some of my questions, the deletion of the requirement in 7101 sub 3. It is proffered here to amend that section by deleting the language, the director of state court shall develop rules for the use of alternative means of making a verbatim record. But I've heard from some of the witnesses, starting with our first witness, the need to make sure that there is training and also of the reporter, and also a dedicated reporter was the language that was used, emphasizing the need for training. I've heard from others concern that for certification, and that there is no requirement for training in our rule, because there's no rules, in terms of the rules as once were required by 7101 sub 3, no training requirement, no certification requirement. So should we have requirements for certification for DAR reporters and for, as you say, you can talk to us about transcribers and training?
So as an evolving industry, first of all, I'd like to say the Making the Record Committee did a tremendous amount of research. I've been following it over the past several years, and I do AAERT supports the rule as it has been proposed. As far as training, in an evolving industry, if you should require training today, you have to at least allow for a transition period. I recall that freelance stenographic reporters were not required to be certified in Wisconsin either. If you were proficient enough operating your machine, you could work as a freelance reporter and let the market prevail. We would definitely encourage certification and certainly training. And there are more training opportunities now, but they are in the process of developing. Just in the last year, we've had two schools, Blue Ledge and Allegiant from Orange Legal in Florida. We just met with them a week ago. Yeah. That they offer online training programs for digital reporting and transcription. I was on an ad hoc committee several years ago with the Milwaukee Area Technical College to explore an online program to teach training for certified reporters and transcribers using digital reporting technology, but it was a chicken and the egg. There aren't the jobs, so if we train them, we have to make sure that they have a place to go. So you have a ripe environment. You are offering positions to collaborate with the technical colleges here to implement those programs. Much of the program is already in process. Now, when we hire people, we look at what is the skill set. You can get those skills through the legal secretarial program. I myself and some of my classmates are sitting on the other side of the aisle. From 1979, I went to Madison Area Technical College for court reporting. I'm one of those individuals that finished all the coursework but just couldn't get that speed. It doesn't mean that the individual sitting there operating the equipment is incompetent. In fact, I suggest that you look at the methodologies that are being used are less important than the individual who's operating them. You are looking at hiring people who are going to manage the court record regardless of what the future brings. I was at a convention in Florida with a National Court Reporters Association, former presidents. We presented to a group of individuals, and we heard from other vendors about the type of technology that's coming down the pike. The court reporter captures and produces the record, whatever that might entail. The court reporter that is a DAR reporter captures that record and maintains a list of annotations so that they can search the record and quickly go back to playback testimony while the system continues to record. There's a reporter in the 3rd District in Minnesota. She's an official court reporter that was part of our demonstration to this group. And she demonstrated how during a sentencing hearing, using her DAR system, she was able to quickly pull up a plea hearing that happened previously and play that back in court rather than suspending the proceeding to have a transcript produced so that they could see what happened in the plea hearing to make a decision. There are opportunities that DAR offers to you. Native language that's being spoken, if you have translators in your courtroom, you're now able to preserve that native language that you weren't able to before in a very good way because you're using multi-channel recording systems. So you are on the forefront. I'm looking at legislation across this country because of my position on the board at AAERT, and what you're proposing is probably the best case scenario. Best practices is going to equal best results. If you want training, indicate that you want to implement training. I do believe that you'll see that the length of time it takes to train an individual to be proficient so that you get that quality record and you keep the wheels of justice rolling along is far less than what it takes to train a stenographic reporter who might be brilliant but just can't get the speed.
How long is the training?
Months, weeks. Now,
well,
it depends on
months
what
or weeks. And so
yes,
you seem to distinguish two types of training, both the training to transcribe and also the training to be certified to operate.
So if you have an individual who has computer skills, well versed in their English and grammar skills, and they need technical training to operate the equipment and learn reporting procedures, you're looking at literally months, a couple of semesters. That seems to be what the programs are putting in place. If they are doing transcription, then they're coming to you with a typing speed of 70, 80 words a minute. They have legal office procedures, terminology. Those classes are already being offered here locally, and it's just transcript formatting. So that is a period of a couple of months as well. If you have an individual that's in your court system and you're just going to teach them the operation, for example, if you have a stenographic reporter who suddenly has an injury and is no longer to take it down at that speed or sit still in a chair for as long as is required, that individual could be taught the technical aspect of operating this equipment in a matter of weeks.
Okay, but the certification itself comes with, it sounds like, about a year's worth of?
No, I think that a person with a certain skill set could take our certification test and pass within 6 months.
Within 6 months, okay, and that includes both transcribing and. So if we were to require everyone to become certified by a certain date, the people now could undergo the training and become certified, you're saying, in about 6 months?
I think about a six-month program would do it for you.
Okay.
As long as you put in place some special, qualifications.
And that would be something you would oversee then as far as the certification goes?
Our AAERT does online certification testing. An individual, we finally are at a point where it is a written test and a transcription test that they can take at home.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any more questions?
This one. If everyone in Judge Rossell's district decided to retire in the next week or so, are there enough certified people out there that they could fill their spots? I don't really have a problem with the certification idea. It just reminds me sort of
right.
of interpreters, right? We're supposed to have an interpreter for every possible hearing, and they must be qualified in a certain respect. On the other hand, if you're in a county that's not Milwaukee, which I was, you may have someone sitting in jail that ought to have a bond hearing, and you don't have a certified interpreter, and guess what? You're going to have a hearing and let them out of jail because they don't belong in jail. So what happens when you don't have enough certified people to fill these spots? Either will judges just ignore the rule and get someone who can do the reporting?
I think you're going to find that if you went to Madison Area Technical College right now, they have a list of probably 75% of the individuals that wanted to become a court reporter but didn't pass that test or didn't finish the system that would be interested in these types of positions. I think that you can put out a list of qualifications and find individuals that would be able to make a quality recording for you so that a quality transcript could be produced. And I'd also like to point out that our company produces hourly and daily transcripts on a daily basis. There really is no reason you can't get a transcript turned around very quickly. Back in the day, you used to have a steno come in to your courtroom for a couple of hours and then be replaced if you wanted a quick transcript turnaround. Some of those same processes are employed in you creating transcripts from DAR recordings.
Okay. Okay. Is the voice recognition software we heard about earlier just dependent on what type of software that individual has, or is that part of what you use for transcription?
We hire individuals. Again, we don't really care what method you use to take it from the voice to the text. But we have stenographic reporters that are using their steno machine listening to recordings. They're using their voice writing software. And then there are people who use their keyboard. And there are programs that are called text expander software programs that allow them to transcribe at 120 words a minute without any difficulty. So they're employing brief forms and different methods. The technology that I witnessed at this conference a few weeks ago showing automated speech recognition is not developed enough to discern between each individual that's speaking. It's getting close. But it would allow you to search a recording based on a word that you're looking for, so you don't have to search text to find the location of that
instance in the recording. Just quick.
Yep.
So help me out here. I'm hearing questions that lean toward at least having people certified in some capacity. I don't know if that's the case or not. But what if I'm in Barron County, even though I love Rice Lake and I love Barron County, the record should reflect. I don't have someone who wants to come work there. Should there be a requirement that they're given a certain period of time to get up to speed, yet the courtroom could be up and running with the person who's willing to come to Barron County?
Yes, I think that some upfront minimal training could get that person started and then give them an opportunity to complete the training within a certain period of time.
What would that period of time be?
I would say 6 months to a year.
Okay, so it could be up to a year, you think, to get certified.
Because that individual is going to be doing other things or working full-time, you're not sending them off full-time to learn this training. We have individuals that apply to work as transcribers for our company that are former lawyers, bachelor's degrees. They're highly educated people, and they come with a skill set that takes care of much of what I was taught when I was 18 years old and went into the court reporting program.
Can all of the training be completed online?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Very much.
Now, Ms. Harris was the last person who signed up for an opportunity to speak today, but is there anybody else who's in the courtroom who would like to speak on this rule petition? Okay, then Judge Koshnick, I'll give you a couple minutes to conclude.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I'd like to pick up with Justice Anne Walsh Bradley's concerns about elimination of the word rule or rules. If you put it back in, that's fine with me. It was not intentionally deliberated to expand my authority. It was just a drafting change. I don't have rules per se right now, but in the court reporter manual, which I confess I have not reviewed recently, it's on CourtNet, there are standards for digital audio reporters as far as monitoring the system and so forth. So we do have standards that are in writing and part of the court reporter manual, which is a manual put out by my office. It's not a rule per se. It's the functional equivalent of a rule. If you want to keep rules in, that's fine.
This is what I'm musing on, and thank you for that comment. Right now, the language that is to be deleted essentially says the director of state court shall develop rules for the use of alternative means. And it is that, and now we're getting rid of the alternative means, and we are indeed using stenographic reporting, voice reporting, and monitored digital audio recording. So I don't have, personally, I don't have as much problem with that as I do the more amorphous things. Before, the amorphous things, if you will, were the alternative means, whatever they might be, and you'd have to develop rules for those alternatives. Now, I'm not sure what other means approved by the director of state courts might be. So we should, seems to me we need some kind of definition, and maybe some kind of definition when, for those situations when you're not, the director of state court's office is not involved in approving, it's just the chief judge and the judge. We just need some guidelines or rules, I think, for those, potpourri of alternatives.
I think that would be a change from the current scenario. And when this rule was written and adopted by the court, I don't know when that was. I'm not sure if DAR was even a known technology. So by keeping an alternative means, it simply leaves open the possibility of new technology that would emerge. And you have the director of state courts and the chief judges superintending over that before it's authorized to be used anywhere. Judge Day told us about a bail hearing where obviously a liberty interest is involved. He had two choices, use the DAR with the clerk running it or don't hold court. So I think you need to have some flexibility for chief judges and circuit court judges to make that decision, shut down court or use some other means. It's a rare occurrence. I never had to do that in 18 years on the bench. Judge Day also did inform me that in 10 years, his DAR reporter, Nicole, has only had to ask for an extension from an appellate court one time for preparing the transcript. So it's true it takes longer to prepare a transcript from a DAR recording than it does from steno notes. That's another reason we need flexibility. Put the steno in the case where you're more likely to have an appeal, a sentencing, a jury trial, a motion hearing. Put the DAR in a low likelihood transcript court, traffic court, small claims court. You know, under and to get to Justice Kelly's question for Ms. Rupnow, I would have answered differently. The answer would be yes. The judge is forced to take the steno if that judge is the first of the vacancy. So you could have a situation where a judge in Clark County has a vacancy and there's a steno available. So you plug the steno in there. That judge may be doing traffic court. You may have a Med Mal case going to jury trial in Buffalo County, and if that's the last slot on the list, that's where the DAR goes. You know, Judge Wambach talked about daily copy of transcripts. Yes, it's a wonderful feature to have, but by putting stringent rules on priority of where employees are placed based upon seniority, so to speak, you remove that flexibility from the administration. I'd rather be able to put a steno with real time who can do daily copy in a medical malpractice jury trial and use the DAR for traffic court, where you're very unlikely to have an appeal. So it really is all about the flexibility, as far as I'm concerned, as an administrator, and keeping courts operating.
Why are you eliminating the first sentence of 7101 sub 3? Are you not going to have the manual anymore, or why do you want that out of there?
7101 sub 3, which line?
The director of state courts shall develop rules for the use of alternative means of making a verbatim record.
As indicated, Justice Bradley, that was just eliminated to make the rule read more plainly. We were incorporating digital audio recording into the reference to steno notes and voice writing. So if you wanted the rules, I hadn't ever been asked to write rules. I haven't been asked to do that. We have the court reporter manual, so it hasn't been used.
I thought the manual were the rules referred to in that first sentence, no?
The court reporter manual, I suppose, is the rule. I suppose if you consider that, it's not a rule per se. It's not Director of State Court's rule. It is a written manual that I put out that applies to digital court reporters.
Are you finished?
Mm-hmm.
I understood you to say that you have no objection to keeping that sentence in.
Right. That's fine. You can put that in. It wasn't taken out with any design. My main goal is to keep things the way they are and have the rule updated to reflect current practice and to recognize DAR as a legitimate.
I think
there is a difference between a rule and a manual. It's rule is a term of art, and you make rules by a particular procedure, whether you're the legislature, or whether you're an agency, or whether you're this court. So I do think rule is different than a manual, and if the court is concerned that whatever is going to be used is done through a formal process, then I guess we'll have to talk about that. But it seems to me that's the only difference between the first sentence that was struck and the second sentence that is currently there. I don't see any difference between alternative means and other means, certainly not one that's definable in the former rule or the one that's being proposed. But I do see a difference between a rule and taking the word rule out.
Right. I agree. And to respond to Chief Justice Rogensack's question for Ms. Piontek with the sick court reporter, yes, a responsible court reporter does provide a copy of his or her dictionary to the clerk of court to keep on file. So if somebody else has to do the transcript, that's available. But in these 20 cases in Milwaukee County I told you about, which we're looking into right now, the reporter's not returning our phone calls. We had 15 staff of court official court reporters look at the notes. None of them were able to make a transcript. So right now the situation is no transcript. We just can't make a transcript. None of the reporters who are on staff in Milwaukee are able to read this person's notes and make a transcript. And so the situation is no transcript is available.
Don't they have a dictionary, as was explained to us before?
No, each reporter has a unique dictionary.
Right.
And if this reporter who's uncooperative with us doesn't provide her dictionary to the other reporters, making a transcript is impossible.
Well, part of the difficulty for a court reporter is the certification at the end, when they have to certify that that's what was done in court, and some of them are hesitant to certify someone else's work and the fact that that's actually what was taken down and said. So there's that layer that's in addition to what you're talking about.
Yes,
maybe that's a hesitancy that's not unfounded, really.
In my mind, that's more of a concern with Steno than with Dar. With Dar, you can listen to it. With a Steno, you have to have a dictionary to interpret those notes. And the thing about Dar, sometimes it's too good. So I remember being in court and two lawyers talking at the same time. You can imagine that. If one of them cites a case, I'm not going to hear it. And the reporter's not going to get it down. They're talking at the same time. I told my reporter, they talk at the same time, just throw your hands up until we speak one at a time. With a Dar, you record both people on isolated separate channels. So we have the opposite problem. That Dar may recite a case that a lawyer mentioned, which the judge never heard. So the record might be too good. So I think the verbatim problem is greater in Steno than it is in Dar. If you have a monitored Dar, you're going to be captured what's being said, and you can listen to it if you have questions about the accuracy of the transcript.
What about that issue you just brought up? What if the judge didn't hear it? Is that really the record of what happened in court? I mean, it is what was said, but yes, there's times you don't hear something. You don't realize you don't hear it. How would we reconcile that?
Well, what I would normally do is I would say you're talking at the same time, counsel. You have to go one at a time, and if I heard you citing a case or you said something, I want to hear what you said. So I would,
right.
And that'd be on the digital recording.
I'm just saying from a practical perspective, what does that, I mean, it brings with it another problem that is a different one in terms of the record. And what is the record?
Dar's almost too good. Right, that's a concern. But I think it's overcome. If they're speaking at the same time, the judge... If there are two pro se litigants who are just fighting about things, it may not be as critical what they're saying as compared to lawyers who are citing cases. So I think just like with the Steno, the judge would ask the lawyers to speak one at a time and repeat what it is that they're saying. And then as far as Judge Wambach's proposal is concerned, that would interfere with the authority that judges now have to make their own appointment of a court reporter. And the committee chose wisely, in my opinion, not to interfere with that appointment authority whatsoever. So, yes, in my opinion, each judge should have the authority to appoint a Steno or a Dar as the judge sees fit. And I think it would be contrary to efficient operation of the courts and the judge's autonomy as an elected constitutional officer to tell that judge, you must hire this person. And there's only one Steno who's applying, whether you like it or not, that's the one you're going to hire. That would be contrary, I think, to the interest in keeping the system running effectively and efficiently. So I think I've responded to the points that I wanted to make. I'm happy to take any other questions.
Thank you very much, and please thank all of the people that were on your committee for making a record. I know they're not all, some are here that didn't speak to us, but it was a tremendous amount of work that you did and something that the court badly, badly needed. So we appreciate it very much. We are now concluded with the hearing on Rule Petition 1901. Ms. Reed, can you come back at 1:30? Are you able to do that for us? Okay, then I think we will break. It's only 5 to 12, and we'll be back at 1:30 to pick up Rule Petition 1902. We are adjourned.